Okay, so if we were to play a word association game right now, and I said, early 2000s hip hop, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Oh, that's easy. It's that gravelly voice.
The gravelly voice, the duets with J-Lo. It's the, you know, the inescapable presence of Ja Rule.
He was everywhere. He was the soundtrack of a generation, really. You couldn't turn on a radio without hearing that specific melodic, gritty sound.
Exactly. He is this massive, just chaotic, larger-than-life figure in pop culture. But today, I want to completely dismantle that image. I want to take the sunglasses off, turn the beat down, and really look at the person underneath. We aren't talking about the rapper today. We're talking about Jeffrey Atkins.
And that is a very, very different conversation because before the fame, you know, before the charts, Jeffrey Atkins was a little boy growing up in Hollis, Queens, and he was living in a world that wasn't just quiet, it was like hermetically sealed.
It's a side of his story I honestly didn't know much about until we pulled this source material. We're doing a deep dive into an article from Christian Culture News. It's titled The Impact of Faith, Ja Rule's Journey from Jehovah's Witness to Hip Hop Icon.
And I have to say, this isn't just a biography.
No.
It reads like a psychological thriller in some parts. It really does. Because the whole mission of this deep dive isn't just to list facts about his childhood. The source material is asking us to explore a specific duality.
Right.
We're looking at how a man who defined the excess and freedom of the rap game was raised in an environment that forbade almost everything he would later come to represent.
It's the ultimate contradiction. I mean, the big question we're trying to answer here is, how does a restrictive, high-control religious upbringing shape the artistic identity of a superstar? Was the music just a job for him, or was it a reaction?
And to understand that reaction, we have to understand the environment he was reacting against. We have to go back to 1976. Jeffrey Atkins is born February 29th, a leap year baby.
Which is a fun piece of trivia. But according to this article, birthdays weren't exactly a time for balloons and cake in the Atkins household.
Not at all. And this is where we have to be, you know, a little nuanced. The source describes his upbringing as being steeped in the doctrines of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for you listening, if you're not familiar with the day-to-day reality of that, the article makes a really important point. It wasn't just, we go to church on Sundays.
Right. It calls it a distinct lifestyle.
Exactly. A total immersion. The source notes a strict adherence to the Bible and a close-knit family environment that basically dictated every single part of daily life. It wasn't just what you believed. It was how you lived every minute of every day.
And when you look at the specifics, strict feels like an understatement. The article lists these restrictions that, for a kid, must have felt like living on another planet. No birthdays, no celebrating holidays.
Yeah, and think about the social implication of that for a second. You're in elementary school, it's December, everyone's making snowflakes and talking about Santa or Hanukkah, and you just have to sit out.
You're immediately other.
Immediately. The source says this led to limited interaction with peers outside the faith.
So you're physically in the neighborhood, but socially, you are completely on an island.
Precisely. And the isolation wasn't just about parties. The article mentions a strict avoidance of secular influences. That's music, movies, television, basically the entire cultural language kids use to bond with each other.
Jeffrey wasn't allowed to speak that language.
Not at all.
Which is just so ironic, considering he grew up to become one of the biggest secular influences in the world.
The irony is palpable. But there's another layer here. It wasn't just about what you couldn't do. It was also about what you had to do. The source points to mandatory evangelistic activities and regular meetings.
So while other kids in Queens are, I don't know, playing stickball, he's probably out knocking on doors or sitting in a Kingdom Hall.
Right.
That is a lot of pressure for a child. But I do want to push back a little, or at least reflect what the article says. It wasn't all misery, was it?
No, and that's a crucial point. If we just paint it as a prison, we're missing the nuance. The source explicitly states that the faith provided a moral framework and a sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a comfort in knowing the rules. There's a safety in being part of a community that calls itself the truth. You have this built-in support network.
So there's this trade-off. You give up the holidays, you give up pop culture, but in return, you get this intense sense of belonging and protection.
Exactly. But the cost of that protection is what the source calls duality. The article argues Jeffrey was living in two worlds. Inside the house, it's biblical law and order. But outside the door, it's Hollis, Queens in the 80s, vibrant, dangerous, loud. He had to learn to code switch before he was even a teenager.
And usually when we hear stories like this, especially with artists, you assume the kid rebels. You assume Jeffrey got tired of the rules and just ran off to join the circus.
Or in this case, the hip-hop scene.
Right. But that's not what happened.
No. The bubble didn't burst from the inside. It was popped from the outside. The catalyst for everything wasn't Jeffrey. It was his mother.
This part of the article really struck me. It describes this pivotal moment where his mother decides to leave the community. And the reasons listed are really interesting. It says she wanted a more conventional upbringing for her children.
Conventional? That is such a heavy word in this context. It implies she looked at the life her kids were living, the isolation, no birthdays, being separate, and she decided she wanted them to have a normal life. She wanted to get away from those rigid rules.
It sounds like a protective instinct. She wanted to open the world up for them. But in a high-control group like this, you can't just hand in your resignation and stop showing up.
No, you really can't. The source is very specific about the gravity of this. In the Jehovah's Witness faith, as described in the article, leaving often results in ostracism. It's not a casual drifting away. The text uses the word rift to describe what happened to the family.
And rift feels mild compared to the other details. The article mentions that relations with extended family who stayed in the faith were strained or severed. That word severed, that's violent. That means grandparents, cousins, aunts, gone.
It suggests a total cutoff. And the source also mentions social ostracism and unspecified legal issues, which really hints that this exit was messy and contentious.
Yeah.
So imagine the psychological whiplash. You have this security, this moral framework, and then suddenly, because your mother wants you to have a birthday party, that entire support system turns on you.
I can't even imagine what that does to a kid's head. We have to look at this through Jeffrey's eyes. He's an adolescent. He's watching his mother, the person he loves most, being treated like a pariah by the very people who taught him about God.
The source says his mother went through severe emotional distress. So Ja Rule wasn't just a bystander. He was a witness to her pain. He saw the direct consequence of choosing freedom over the group. And the article notes that this experience shattered his perception of the faith.
Shattered. That's the word. It implies something that can't be put back together.
Right. It taught him this brutal lesson about the consequences of leaving a tight-knit community. It sparked confusion, disillusionment. But, and this is the part I found really fascinating, the source makes a very important distinction. It says this didn't make him an atheist.
Really?
Hmm.
Because if that happened to me, I feel like I'd want nothing to do with any of it.
You would think so. Hmm. But the article says it made him question organized religion. He started to see the multifaceted nature of faith. Essentially, he realized that the structure, the institution, the rules could cause pain, but that didn't necessarily mean the spiritual belief itself was wrong.
So he separated the management from the message.
That's a great way to put it.
That is a very sophisticated distinction for a young person to make. I still believe, but I don't believe in you.
Exactly. So now you have this teenager. He's disillusioned. He's socially awkward because he's never been allowed to hang out with so-called worldly kids. His family's been blown apart. And suddenly, he's thrust into the secular world with no roadmap.
And what does he find to fill that void? He finds hip-hop.
The ultimate contrast.
I mean, think about the values we just discussed. Modesty, silence, strict adherence to rules. And then think about hip-hop in the 90s.
Fragging, noise, breaking the rules, individualism. It's the antithesis of his childhood. The source frames this as an escape. He felt restricted by doctrines that discouraged expression, so hip-hop became the place where he could finally have a voice. It became his solace.
So it wasn't just a hobby. It sounds like it was a survival mechanism.
It was dissent. The article uses that word. The music was his way of rebelling against the silence he was raised in. But here's where it gets really interesting for the music nerds listening. The source argues his background actually shaped the content of his music.
How so? Because when I think Ja Rule, I think always on time. I don't necessarily think, you know, theological dissertation.
Fair point. But if you look closer, the source says his lyrics explore the duality of his existence, faith versus the streets. He writes about hardship, about resilience, and specifically the article points out themes of alienation and isolation.
Which makes total sense now. I mean, if you spend your entire childhood looking through the window at a party you weren't allowed to attend, you're going to understand alienation better than anyone.
Precisely. That feeling of being an outsider, of not belonging, that's just baked into his psyche. The article argues that this internal conflict is what made his music feel authentic to listeners. He wasn't just rapping about street life in terms of crime. He was rapping about the struggle to find out who you are when your foundation has been pulled out from under you.
It gives a whole new meaning to pain as love, doesn't it?
It really, really does. He was processing the trauma of that family rift in real time on the charts, and creative expression gave him an avenue to explore his identity, an identity that had previously been dictated to him by the church.
So we've tracked the break. He leaves the glass bubble. He becomes this icon. But the story doesn't end with him just being a rebel. The article has a section on his current values. Where does he stand now? Is he still angry?
According to the source, no. There's been a reconciliation, but it's a reconciliation on his own terms. He hasn't gone back to the organization. He's not knocking on doors. But he hasn't rejected spirituality either.
He found a middle ground.
He did. The source identifies three pillars of his current worldview: family, forgiveness, and resilience.
Okay, let's unpack those, because family seems like a really loaded term given what we know about his extended family severing ties.
It is loaded. But the article suggests that his own family unit, his wife, his kids, that now acts as his support system. He basically replaced the church community he lost with a family community he built himself. He created his own congregation in his home, but one based on connection, not restriction.
That's powerful. It's like he's correcting the mistakes of the past with his own children.
Exactly. And then there's forgiveness. The source emphasizes that he views forgiveness, both for himself and for others, as a tool for healing.
That seems incredibly difficult. I mean, if I watch my mother suffer severe emotional distress because a group of people, I don't know if I could get to forgiveness.
It's a heavy lift, but the source frames it as a way to stop the past from dictating the future. If he held on to that anger at the ostracism, the legal issues, he would still be trapped by them. Forgiving them is the final act of breaking free. It's saying, you don't control my emotions anymore.
And finally, resilience.
That's the narrative arc of the whole piece, really. The idea that you can go through that specific kind of trauma, spiritual displacement, and come out the other side intact. The article concludes with this really interesting synthesis. It says, he took the moral framework of his youth.
Discipline. The focus.
Right. He kept the discipline. He kept the sense of morality. But he stripped away all the restrictions and the dogma. He just applied that work ethic to his life as an artist and a family man.
That is such a fascinating synthesis. He didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. He kept the engine, but changed the car.
That's a great metaphor for it. And that synthesis is what the article argues makes him such a compelling figure. It's not just about the hits. It's about the journey from that quiet, restrictive home in Queens to the global stage.
It really recontextualizes his entire career for me. You just hear the grit in his voice differently when you know it comes from a place of having to fight to even be heard.
Mm-hmm. It highlights what the source calls the complex interplay between faith and self-discovery. His career isn't just a series of business moves. It's a documentation of a man figuring out who he is outside of that doctrine.
Okay, so let's zoom out. The full picture we've painted here. We start with Jeffrey Atkins in Hollis, Queens, living a life of strict adherence. No holidays, no birthdays, a total separation from the world.
A world of safety, but also a world of silence.
Then comes the rupture. His mother tries to leave to give her kids a conventional life, and the community responds with the nuclear option, ostracism. The bubble bursts, and Jeffrey watches the people he trusted turn their backs on his family.
And that trauma fuels a need for escape. He finds hip-hop, the loudest, most expressive culture available. He pours that alienation, that duality, right into his music. He takes the pain of the past and turns it into the sound of the 2000s.
And finally, he lands in a place of peace. He builds a life based on family and forgiveness, keeping the spiritual depth but leaving behind the cage.
It's a remarkable trajectory, and the source material really drives home the point that you just cannot separate the art from the artist's history.
You really can't. The article says it clearly. His icon status is built on a foundation of deep personal struggle and religious trauma. That depth is what sustained him.
Which leaves us with a pretty provocative thought to chew on. We often look at restrictive upbringings, especially religious ones, as purely negative. Something to be survived.
Right. We think, oh, poor kid, he missed out on Christmas.
Exactly. But based on this source, you have to wonder, if Jeffrey Atkins had never experienced that extreme restriction, if he had just been a regular kid with birthdays and cartoons and no duality to fight against, would he have ever felt that intense need to express himself?
That is the question. Would he have had that fire if he hadn't been freezing in the cold first?
Does true artistic freedom require a cage to break out of? The source seems to suggest that the pressure of that environment is exactly what created the diamond.
It's the friction that creates the spark. And in this case, That spark turned into an inferno called Ja Rule.
It certainly did.
Well, that is all the time we have for this deep dive. I hope this gave you a new perspective on a familiar face and maybe makes you listen to those old tracks a little differently.
Always check the backstory.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.